MyMac Podcast 145.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And we're back for another week of the MyMac.com podcast. I'm Tim Robertson.
I'm Chad Perry.
And I'm Guy Searle.
And we've been actually here for a half hour talking about comic books, of all things.
Indeed. Because there's very little to talk about in the Mac universe this week.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was probably a heck of a lot more interesting than any news that's going on in the Mac universe.
There's not a lot of Mac news going on. And
quite, so good night, everybody!
Good night, see you next week. But quite honestly, I haven't been following the Mac news a whole lot this week.
Yeah.
So... The tragedy that is my health in the last month continues. This time, broken ribs.
Yep, from hacking.
Is that from you coughing, or was that based on something
else?
No,
it was all from coughing. Yeah, sucks. But what are you gonna do?
Wait for them to heal.
You know, they gave me Vicodin mixed with something else,
like ibuprofen, probably.
I don't know.
And how do you know that?
Yeah. I've been on it more than once.
Well, you know, those things usually don't have much of an effect on me. They don't.
And that's
usually...
why you took two?
Well, what happened was...
And you're soaking it.
Monday morning, I took two. And it did dull the pain pretty good. And it says every 4 to 6 hours. So four hours went by, and I took another two. And probably early that afternoon... Woo!
Yeah.
And I don't like that feeling. I really don't. See, I never have to worry about becoming a drug user. I don't like the feeling of being out of control and not in charge of my own mind.
Well, I can remember back in the 80s when I was traveling overseas. I didn't have chicken pox as a kid, and I picked it up in of all places, Brazil.
That was when he was in that opium den.
Yeah. And ended up coming home on Halloween night in 87, and it was a miserable experience that would take way too long to explain here. But they ended up, when I got home, they gave me Percocet. And when I got home with the prescription, I had, you know, flown from Brazil to Miami, dealt with the Miami crap, flew to D.C., dealt with the D.C. crap, finally got home, hospital, got these pills. And when I got home, I looked at the bottle and it said, take one or two for pain as needed. Well, I was in a lot of pain, so I took two. And within about a half hour, I was in la-la land. Both eyes were in the same socket. I started calling people that I hadn't talked to in probably 5 years. Oh, I got chickenpox in Brazil. Whee! And they're probably wondering, who the hell is this?
Climbing the pyramid with Homer Simpson, talking to the coyote that sounds like Johnny Cash.
Well, that was obscure.
Yeah,
that's very obscure.
Well, there is some news. They finally released the iPhone in Europe, or in England anyway.
Yep.
And it's on the O2 network, whatever that is.
Yep.
I'm sure people in England know what the O2 network is.
That, I believe,
and
is Oprah's
network. Sounds like it's a similar deal to what Apple got with AT&T, where they had exclusive rights for a certain amount of time.
It's good news for our fellows over the pond.
Yes, indeed.
It's good news. Germany's going to get it soon. Italy. Pretty much all of Europe's going to be getting the iPhone. And I hope they enjoy it as much as I have. Because I have to say, you know, and I've said this already, the more I use it, you're holding back me on there, aren't you, Chad?
Yeah, I am. It's okay.
Your lips were quivering.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay, Chad. Don't cry.
Well, now, the touch is out, Chad.
Now, I want to talk to you. Have you been following any of the news about the touch?
I have, yeah. Matter of fact, I have. As far as the screen resolutions that we're talking about,
I've been hearing that the video quality is not as good as the iPhone or the iPod,
which is why I'm probably going to wait for Christmas. So,
well, maybe they'll have the kinks worked out by then.
Yeah, or they'll have a better screen put in, because I know from Bill Palmer's analysis, it's not even the same screen.
No, that's what it's looking like. I don't have one, nor have I looked at one, so I can't really speak to it with any sort of authority, but I think if I was in the market for one, and I'm not at all, I think I would wait too.
Yeah.
Talking to, excuse me, Bill Palmer the other day, that really hurt, by the way. Every time he uses his iTouch, he feels like he should be using the iPhone. Mm-hmm. It's just missing so much. In fact, if you head up to mymac.com, he does have a blog post called iPhone's Features You'll Miss Out by Buying an iPod Touch. Interesting. I would really like to get my hands on one and play with it for a couple days and make my own.
It's sung to this to a Divinyl song. I touch myself.
Oh, cute. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Also, I posted a, I thought was kind of a cool video of Steve Jobs and John Lasseter at Pixar on the Charlie Rose Show.
Mm.
And I did watch it. That was cool.
And that was shot and recorded a couple years before Steve was returned to Apple.
Yeah.
His triumphant return. Yeah,
and it was very, very interesting. I was interested in it. And I thought more people than just me would be, so I posted it up on our blog. You can watch it right on the website, too.
Yeah, and the cool thing is that if you, like, rip it into QuickTime and then play it backwards, you hear Steve Jobs saying, I'm coming back to Apple.
I killed Paul.
David Cohen has an iPhone for UK announced. Bakari has a Rebooks the Email Way, which is kind of interesting. It's older books, but you literally get pages of these books emailed to you on a schedule. So if you want to read a book and you don't want to sit there and read the whole thing in one sitting, or go to the library and rent it, and say, you know, you got mobile email, you get like a couple pages a day sent to you. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
If there's some old book out there that you've been always kind of wanted to go back and, you know, the diary of Ulysses S. Grant, you know, this might be a good way of reading it. Bill Palmer has a couple more. Klaus Wolf has a screencast online right now called Search Keywords in Firefox. And that's a nice little video. It lasts, I think, 5 minutes or so. Definitely worth checking out. What's that, guy?
I haven't watched that yet.
It was interesting. I liked it. You have a blog post called a 9/11 tribute.
Yeah, that's about a good friend of mine that was killed at the Twin Towers on 9/11. And I guess the most tragic part of it, besides the fact that he died, was that he didn't even have to be there. He went there to help.
Well, I think that's kind of the true definition of a hero, isn't it?
Yeah.
His name is Jeff Simpson. And I tried to put it in afterwards, but I'm still having edit problems on the blog side. In a comment that I made after the post, there's a URL there to see the tribute page for Jeff.
You know, on the iPhone, if it detects a URL, it will actually open that URL without it actually being a link. I wonder why other web browsers don't do that yet. It works in mobile Safari.
Hmm.
Same thing with phone numbers.
You just click on it and it calls or does whatever?
That's right.
That is cool.
Huh.
Hello? Yet another reason to buy an iPhone. Yes.
Indeed. So that is a good question, though. I mean, if the iPod Touch runs about the same price as the bargain basement iPhone, which is still 8 gig, what's it worth? I mean, is it easy? Would you rather go get the iPhone or would you rather get the iPod Touch?
If I was going to have to choose between them and cost wasn't an issue, and the screens were the same, may as well throw that in there, too. I would probably go for the iPhone, mostly because, God, how to put this?
It's the cool factor, isn't it, guy?
No, it's not really the cool factor. It's just that if you're going to get a device that's that big, and you know, for a device of that type, it's not small.
Yeah.
Then you may as well just go ahead and get the one that does more.
Hmm.
But you know, we were talking, I guess, last week about the price drop of the iPhones.
Yep.
And as I thought about it, one thing that I couldn't really understand, if they were able to get 16 gigs of memory into an iPod Touch, there really wasn't any reason why they couldn't have done the same for the iPhone. And it probably would have saved them a lot of grief if they had, you know, gone ahead and made the 8 gigabyte iPhone $399, but then added a new iPhone with 16 gigs for $499, and then gone ahead and priced the Touch the way they did.
Yeah, I suppose you're right, but I think we also talked about some of the risk factor of going, well, you're right. If they're going to announce it all, they should have announced it all at once.
Yeah, and you know that there's probably going to be at least one more iPhone hardware update before Christmas. And chances are the only thing they're going to do to it is
increase the memory. Yeah.
Because they can't put it out there for any other cell phone companies for, I'm not, is it 2 years or 5 years that AT&T
I thought it was two years.
I'd have to look that up.
You have to look it up because I don't recall either. I don't know whether, I know the contracts were 2 years, but I don't know whether the contract with AT&T, the exclusive deal was 2 years or not.
I think it's either 2 years or 5 years.
Yeah.
But the only other thing that they could do with it, and this would be probably more important to the people in Europe, would be to release it with 3G.
Right now, I don't have my headphones on.
Hello. Yes.
Yeah, what are you guys talking about?
And then Tim fell off the wagon. Oh, hey, Tim!
Actually, I don't usually do that, but I didn't recognize the phone number, but I did see that it was coming in from overseas. So I thought, well, this might be important. So I went and answered the phone in the hallway. I don't know if you could actually hear me. And it's one of our soon-to-be new writers. His name is BJ, and he's from England. And that's who it was.
Cool.
So BJ is a big fan of the podcast. He wants to get on sometime, and we're definitely going to have him on.
Did you tell him to Skype in right now?
No, actually, I didn't think of it. I should have. So BJ is going to be listening to the show. Mm-hmm. Wondering at which point he called in, and now he knows.
No, the guy and I were just talking about the iPhone versus iPod Touch, and at the same price point, which would you rather have? And, of course, Guy was of the iPhone contention, and rightfully so.
I am, too.
If price is no issue, then just get the device that does more.
Well, it's not just that does more, because, let's be honest, a BlackBerry does more than a Touch. That being said, the more I've used the iPhone, the more I really, really appreciate it and really like it. It's it's probably the best thing Apple's created since the iPod. It really is. It may, in the long run, surpass the iPod as far as usability and acceptability and popularity. You never know. But I really, really dig mine. I don't go anywhere without it now, obviously. It's a good machine. Good little device, gadget.
Well, you know what, to me, in Bill Palmer's review, since this is what sparked this whole debate, you know the thing that kind of bugged me more than anything, and this is a weird one, was not even the screen resolution didn't bother me that much, because I've never used my iPod for video because I had an old third-generation iPod that didn't have that capability.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It was the fact that I couldn't add items to the calendar on the iPod Touch.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't know why they would do that.
Because, frankly,
well, how do you
to me...
Do you have to sync it with your computer?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, the whole point of having it with you is so, if you're with someone and they make a change or a new appointment, done.
Yeah.
You're done with it.
Because, frankly, when I was a Palm user, that was the one thing that I did like about the Palm, was I could do all that stuff. And what I wanted from an iPod was something that could do the same things as my Palm did, plus I could also do web surfing, plus I could do all the media... carry all the media that I wanted.
We got a lot of really good content up at mymac.com right now. Right before this, we're going to have four articles posted between our last podcast and this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them is worth reading. Up on the very top is using Adobe CS3 Dreamweaver from Rich Lefko.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually got an email from Adobe wanting to know if they could pull our logo and a quote from this article to put it up on their website. So.
Oh, neat.
And I said, hell no.
Yeah, right.
Screw you guys. Adobe, can we use your stuff for some free PR? No, I didn't say that. I said, yeah. Speaking of Adobe, we also have a book review from Bakari, the Adobe Photoshop CS3 book. And he has I don't know who this person is in this picture as part of the review, but for some reason she kind of creeps me out.
What?
Yeah, I don't know why. It's her smile. She looks evil.
I think she's a Cylon.
She looks evil in her smile. She's like, I'm going to kill you. No, she doesn't.
It's a wedding photo. Probably one of Bakari's. So.
A big event happened in the MyMac universe this week. Donnie Yankelo's Maxpiration number 100.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in
the century mark.
A century mark. That's pretty awesome. 2 years that he's been writing these. And
you go,
he kind of goes through his favorite Maxpirations over the last 100. And I found it really interesting to kind of go back and look at some of this stuff because it has been so long since he's been doing it, which is no small feat in today's day and age to create and write 100 episodes of anything.
Yeah.
Let alone a weekly how-to Mac column.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that, man, oh, how am I going to come up with 100 things?
Well, and he packs
things?
It full of useful stuff, too. And that's exactly. Thing, oh, yeah. Just like,
no doubt.
Yeah.
And a numbers review, numbers 08.
Yep, that's a nice little overview from Bakari, and I really enjoyed reading it. And even David's comments from last week's podcast
was interesting about it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Numbers and iWork itself, I keep trying to justify it to myself that maybe I should go out and buy it. I have absolutely no need for numbers, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I'm doing anything like that, I'm probably going to build my own in FileMaker.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been a FileMaker user forever.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but is numbers really meant for, you know, hardcore Excel or FileMaker users? I don't think so.
But see, I never do spreadsheet work at all. So if I'm doing stuff with numbers, FileMaker's probably my number one choice to do it in. Simply because, you know, I know how to create everything I need to in there. I know how to do the calculations, set up calculation fields, you know.
That's a good question, because I wonder how many home users actually are hardcore Excel or spreadsheet users.
Probably not a lot.
No.
I couldn't imagine. Where do you think iWork is aiming at, though? Do you think it's aiming at, like, the small business or the home user? Because
I would say the home user.
You think so?
Especially, you know, I mean, prior to iWork 08, they didn't even have any kind of numbers cruncher in there at all. And as a first effort, numbers isn't bad. But there's stuff that a small business would want to do that either numbers doesn't have a help me here.
I'm not a psychiatrist.
God knows I need one.
Linked workbooks template, function.
Template.
Yeah.
Template. It either doesn't have a template for, or it's not intuitive enough to make for, you know, for somebody to do on their own. So I think for now, they're still just kind of feeling their way to seeing you know, what the market thinks and where they need to go with it. Because if you look at Pages, for example, Pages, especially the first version, it was okay. You know, it was a neat little program, and it's now morphed into, really, as far as I'm concerned, quite an amazing program, especially with the ability to export and import all the new, you know, Microsoft Office 2007 files from Windows.
Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to figure out where.
Or even Microsoft could do it for the Mac.
Well, another big thing that launched this week was Microsoft's preview of, yep, what is it, Microsoft Mac Office 2008.
Yeah, Mac Office 2008.
You can find it at macoffice2008.com.
You know what I heard about that?
What?
That the website screwed up, that they couldn't get the website to work properly.
Well, you know what's funny is it uses Flash. And Microsoft just came out, for Windows anyways, their very own, quote, Flash killer.
Oh.
That it's the standard that Microsoft is pushing to replace Flash, that it does more. But yet, when it comes to their own website...
Flash. They use Flash.
They use Flash because it just works.
Everybody else uses it and it just works.
And everyone,
what's the purpose of chasing down some of these things?
Microsoft's always done that, though. I mean,
yeah,
that's from almost day one of Microsoft.
Model, I suppose.
Well, look, you know, Microsoft Vista.
Yeah.
Office 9, or Microsoft 98, 95.
Yeah.
XP.
Yeah.
You know, that all got their start because
Windows
of the Macintosh.
Windows 3.1.1.
Right.
Yeah.
You go back to the very beginning of Microsoft. What did they do? Well, they offered a solution to a company, IBM, but they didn't actually write the software. They just went out and bought it, changed it a little bit.
Some company in Texas.
Well, not some company, some guy.
Mm-hmm.
They gave him like $300 for it. and they made billions. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft has never been about innovation. I think, if anything, Microsoft sees a business opportunity and goes after it with gusto. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that per se.
No.
But let's not pretend that they're some innovative company. They're not. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they need to be. They pretty much allow everybody else to innovate, and then they copy. Just,
they buy what seems useful to them.
Buy or copy, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes they make it better. Sometimes mm-hmm. they don't.
Yeah.
But because of their monopoly power in the operating system, it doesn't matter if theirs is better, good, mm-hmm. worse, the same. Theirs is always going to become
the
standard.
There's a lot of people that'll just, right. they'll just buy it.
But the dichotomy between the operating system, the computer, the user, and the internet has changed all that.
Mm-hmm.
Where you don't have to use Microsoft's bloated software anymore.
Right.
And a lot of people are choosing not to. Even those who buy PCs. I don't think Linux will ever be a threat to Windows.
No.
Or even the Mac, for that matter. It's just,
well, certainly not until they can come up with like one unified version of it.
But the problem there, Guy, is who is they?
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. Is there's no one person working
on it. Right, there's thousands of people, and they all have their opinion, and there's not one decision-making body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Linux will continue to be on the fringe mm-hmm. and a hobbyist OS. Unless it comes to stuff like, you know, server software. But people don't interact with that anyway, so mm-hmm. it really doesn't make a difference. Excuse me. That hurt, by the way. So where does that leave Microsoft? I think they're in trouble. You know, they want to control a lot more than they're able to control nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Apple's kind of found the sweet spot where they make great hardware, they make great software, and they're innovating now to an extent that it's very hard for other people to copy them.
Mm-hmm.
Or when they finally do catch up to whatever Apple had invented, Apple's onto something else.
Yeah.
I think both the iPhone and the iTouch prove that.
So do you think we're ever going to see a Zune 2.0?
Yes.
You do?
And you know, here's the thing, and I've said this when the Zune first, before the Zune launched, if you remember back.
Yeah.
And I'll say it about Zune 2.0. I hope it's a fabulous product. I hope it works with the Macs, and I hope that Microsoft makes it so good that everybody wants to buy one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would I say that?
So that Apple will innovate.
Exactly.
You're insane.
So Apple has the motivation to make the iPods better and the iPhones. Because without competition, Apple can rest on their laurels.
Yeah, but the thing is, do you think with all the hype that surrounds Apple's announcements and the whole reality distortion field, do you think Apple's become their own competition? Do you think they've set, in other words, have they set the bar so high for themselves now that if they don't come out with something innovative, everybody goes, oh, well, that's okay, that's great, yeah, whatever.
But when's the last time that has happened? Maybe Apple TV? Maybe.
Yeah, Apple TV, I'd say.
Yeah.
We'll see what that morphs into. I don't think Apple's done with the Apple TV.
We'll see. I'm not sure myself. Here's a question. What do you guys hope, or what do you think we're going to see at Macworld Expo? Because let's be honest, I could see a refresh on some of the computers, but
hopefully a new MacBook Pro.
But we're not going to see probably a MacBook Pro or something like that. But do you think there's going to be one more thing announced? And if so, what could it possibly be? We've pretty much got everything that we've been speculating about for at least 3-4 years now. We've got a telephone.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a video iPod.
Mm-hmm.
It's all got all
we've
the
got
touch
a video
screen.
Nano.
Right. The processors aren't getting significantly faster now.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a new iMac design. But let's be honest, it's not much different than
the old iMac.
Yeah, it just looks different. It's like the new model, like they do in automobiles. The Mac Pros, I mean, they're about as fast as they're going to make them for a while. So you might you'll see some speed bumps, but not significant. So, you know, we've even got a new keyboard now.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we missing? What's out there that Apple's not doing?
Mid-range.
Monitors, maybe?
Yeah, mid-range tower.
Well, they are Apple Incorporated, not Apple Computer anymore.
So what's another electronic device that Apple can get into? It's not going to be the gaming industry, because that would just be insane.
Well, it could be. That's where I was going to go
with
it.
Unless they bought Nintendo.
No.
I don't see that happening.
No.
They're not.
No, not with such success. I mean, the time to buy Nintendo was before the Wii and the DS came
right,
out.
Right. If anything, Nintendo might buy Apple. That's fine. Are they going to buy Microsoft out? I don't think so.
No.
They're not going to buy Sony. So, do you think Apple coming out with a game system, is it all plausible? I don't.
No.
I think the market is saturated with game systems.
I don't think they're going to go with HD monitors either. Or, excuse me, HD displays, just like with what Gateway did. Or,
in other words, computer built into the TV.
There's really no, there's no call for it.
For what?
For an Apple TV. You know what I mean?
An actual Apple television monitor / device, yeah.
You wouldn't be interested if you could go buy a new TV roughly the same price as current 42-inch LCD plasma TVs that
has
the Mac OS built right in?
It would have to be one hell of a price.
No, around the same price as the current TVs.
Well, they don't thrill me either, so it's hard to say.
I think it might be interesting. And built-in Apple TV? Maybe that's all it is. It's a television set from Apple with Apple TV built in. You can stream your stuff from iTunes directly to your TV. I mean, they kind of already got that, but now they put you in a brand new TV. I don't see them doing it, but what else is there? Apple TV 2.0? And if so, what can they possibly do to improve that significantly enough to get anybody excited?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're going to come out with Leopard here in a couple more weeks, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
What's left for January?
That is a good question. I know that Steve at one point had said we've got some real exciting products we're developing right now, but I'm almost wondering if he was talking about the new Nano and the new Touch.
I would assume so.
I think that's what we were all assuming when he said that a couple months back.
The big products from Apple, I think, now they're all out there.
Yeah.
What's left? What's the big product Apple could come out with in January that would make everybody sit up and go, holy moly, look at that. Apple's done it again. Now, we could speculate here, but I want to open this up to the listeners out there. Either via email or pick up a telephone and call us.
1-801-938-5559. Leave us a message. What do you think Apple's next big product will be?
What's their next big thing?
Yeah.
I hope we get some really good answers because I'm honestly, I don't know.
The dilithium regulated warp core. Steve Jobs makes space exploration possible.
So we've got
a
fenestration coming up here next, and let's take a listen to that. We'll be back next week, hopefully with some really good rumors or really good speculation on the listeners' part.
Oh, God, just something, please.
Something. Send us something.
Please send us some speculations.
We would like your opinions.
Excellent.
So my name's Tim.
I'm Chad.
I'm Guy.
See you next week.
Tim, this is Robert Hisrig with an audio comment regarding the iPod lineup from episode 144. And I wanted to tell you that the iPod that gets me the most excited is actually the new Nano. I have several iPods. I have a Shuffle, which I never use. I have a third generation 30 gig iPod, which I also never use. I have a fifth generation 30 gig iPod, which I rarely use. And then I have a first generation Nano, which I always use. It is my favorite iPod. And the only reason that the new iPod excites me is because I can now sell my video iPod and my existing Nano and combine the two into the one device. One of the reasons I don't like my current 30 gig iPod is it's just big. And you know what? I don't need to carry that much music around with me. Yes, I'm glad that Apple has made a new classic iPod that has 160 gigs. I'm sure that's great for some people, but it would literally take you, a month and a half to listen to all of the tracks that you can store on that iPod now? That's just crazy. I know if you have video, it would be a lot less time than that, but, do you really need to carry that much music around with you? I mean, I guess if you're using it as a backup device to your music collection, that there's some argument there, but anyway. The only reason that I have my current 30 gig iPod is because occasionally I like to move television programming off of iTunes and watch it on my TV. That's the only time I use my video iPod now. On the other hand, my current Nano, the first generation that I own, I use constantly. I use it while I'm commuting. And what I fill it up with is podcasts, obviously. And then I put some of my favorite tracks on there, as well as some recent tracks. And I do this all via a series of smart playlists. That way I always have just what I want and nothing more, which is another factor. If you've got 160 gigs of music on one iPod and you're looking for a specific track, how much longer does it take you to surf through all that to get to the thing that you want? So yes, for me, the new Nano is very exciting because it combines the best of both worlds in the way I live my digital lifestyle. Hey, I also wanted to let you know, I did not get the iPhone. There are just too many things that I don't like about the iPhone, one of which is the speakerphone, which is barely audible. I don't know if you've tried to use the speakerphone in the car while driving, but I have spoken to a few people who were trying to use their iPhone while they were in the car, and they could not hear me. Which brings up another thing that I don't like about the iPhone, and that is that the touchscreen. It doesn't have voice dialing, and for me to dial the phone is a real hassle while I'm driving. My current phone is set up with some one-touch dialing, and I have several numbers programmed into the number keypad, and for me to, say, dial home, all I have to do is hold down the number 5 for a couple of seconds, and it automatically dials home. For me to do something similar on the iPhone would require at least 4 steps, and that is to, 1, unlock the phone, 2, select contacts, navigate to where the home telephone number is, and then tap twice to call, all of which I would have to be looking at the phone to do while driving. If the iPhone had speech dialing or voice dialing, that would alleviate that problem, but the touch interface also would interfere with the way I navigate my iPod. My current Nano, and when I'm using it in the car, I don't have to look at it to change tracks, forward tracks, fast forward tracks, or even shut it off. I can just navigate through the scroll wheel. I know what the positions are. Even if I'm holding the Nano upside down and using my left hand, I can stop the tracks and forward the tracks. If I was trying to do that while I was driving with the iPhone, I think I might be jeopardizing my own safety. As you know, I've been to the store many times, and I really do want an iPod/phone combination, but the current edition of the iPhone, I think, just falls a little bit short for me. And I'll be waiting either until they drop the price or until they release a new one with voice dialing or even better, voice commands and a better speakerphone.
Hello, my name is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. Welcome to Fenestration for the MyMac Podcast 145, number 37 in an ongoing series. As regular listeners will be aware, there are currently 2 virtualization products available for the Macintosh platform. There is Parallels from SWSoft, otherwise known as Parallels Inc., and there's Fusion from VMware. Given that both products are in commercial release and are competing directly with each other, I thought it would be worthwhile to spend some time comparing the two products and understanding exactly what the pros and cons of each are. First of all, let's talk about price of entry. The price of both products is exactly the same, $79.99. In concept, both products run on the Intel Macintoshes specifically, and what they do is they leverage the hypervisor technology available within the Intel Core Duo set and Core 2 Duo set to allow you to create a virtual machine on your Mac. This virtual machine, even though it actually is a separate from your OS X installation, is actually running at the same time as OS X, and as the name implies, it's a completely partitioned, separate virtual machine from your OS X installation. What you can then do is install an operating system into this virtual machine. And any operating system that's supported by the Intel chipset should theoretically run within a virtual machine. Primary operating system that people choose to use is, of course, Microsoft Windows. Both products can run Windows Vista and Windows XP, though VMware can run older versions of Windows, which Parallels doesn't really do. For both products, you can also theoretically install Linux. This varies between the two products, but is achievable on both of them. On VMware, it's certainly a lot easier. For both Parallels and Fusion, what you're actually virtualizing is your Intel processor. What you're generally not virtualizing is the rest of the hardware on your Mac. So what both products do is they create interfaces to your network card, your graphics subsystem, your memory subsystem, effectively everything you would need to control within a machine in order to give the best experience for your operating system. What this allows you to do, for instance, with your network card is to approach your networking in several different ways. You can have a network address translation layer between your virtual machine and your Mac, which means that your virtual machine is on a separate networking layer than your Mac is, as if it was connected to your Mac via a router. You can have a bridge networking mode where effectively you use exactly the same network adapter for your virtual machine and your Mac, and your virtual machine receives a network address on the same subnet as your Mac. Or you can create an isolated networking mode wherein, in effect, your virtual machine does not have access to the network. Both products offer an integration mode with the OS X operating system. On Parallels, this is called Coherent, and on Fusion, it's called Unity. In these modes, you can use the Expose windows to actually move between your Windows and Mac systems immediately, just by clicking a mouse between one and the other. And in both circumstances, the products have a series of drivers that run within the virtual machine to allow you to do cool things like drag and drop files between your Mac and Windows operating systems, or to move your mouse immediately from the Windows window to the Mac window and vice versa. Each of them also has a mode where you can run Windows within a window on your OS X desktop, or you can have it run full screen, dominating your display. And they also have a mode where effectively they hide the Windows desktop, and any Windows applications running look as if they're running within the OS X environment. So at this point, you may be thinking, well, what's to differentiate these two products from each other? Well, there are a couple of differences, and they're going to be important to you depending on your approach to running Windows applications on your Mac. First of all, let's talk about background. VMware is a company that's been in virtualization on the PC side for around 10 years, and they're certainly the market leader in virtualization in that environment. They have products that go all the way up to run on big server hardware running many virtual machines at the same time. And certainly if you go into any big corporate anywhere in the States or Europe and look for virtualization technology, VMware is probably what you'll find running there. What they've been able to do with Fusion is to bring that experience and that stability and that corporate approach to delivering virtual applications and turn that into a Macintosh version. So what you can do is you find you've got complete cross-compatibility with all the other VMware versions running on other platforms. You can take virtual machines created on the Mac and run them on the PC or on the server. And similarly, you can take applications and virtual products running from VMware on the PC side and run them straight away in Fusion on your Mac. Parallels, by contrast, is a much smaller company and haven't been around as long. But what they did is they brought virtualization first to the Macintosh platform. They were first out of the gate after the Intel processors were launched, and effectively within a few months they had a working product that was knocking the socks off anything else that was available at the time. They've had 2 years to bring that product to maturity, and they've gone through three releases in that time, while at the same time VMware were only working in a beta version of their original product. They were the first to innovate with new features. For instance, the mode that allows Windows applications to look like they're running in OS X was a Parallels innovation. Basically, VMware adopted the same technology when they brought their product out. So you could say that Parallels has been the leader from the front. Performance-wise, well, it's hard to tell really which product runs better than the other, because of course you're varying them running different applications on different Macs at the same time. So it's really going to depend on exactly the configuration of your Mac and what you're doing on it, how well Parallels or VMware is going to run on your system. However, it is worth noting that the VMware Fusion product is capable of accessing both of the cores of your processor at the same time, which means if you're running a processor-intensive application on the Windows side, such as Photoshop when it's doing filters, you should expect to see better performance than you would with the equivalent Parallels setup. Parallels can only access one core, and effectively what it does is it uses one core for virtualization and leaves the other core to keep your Mac going. Now, with the VMware approach, I've never seen the Mac slow down while VMware is busy, so I don't really know whether using the two-core or one-core approach is better. Where Parallels leads is its integration with OS X. The coherence feature that Parallels has is more mature than the Unity version that Fusion has, and I certainly find that Parallels works more effectively if you hide the Windows desktop and allow your XP applications to appear as if they're running in OS X. If you do the same thing with Unity under Fusion, I find it's not quite as seamless as it is with the Parallels version. However, the flip side of this is that Parallels have continued to develop this concept, and in my mind are developing it too far in the wrong direction. The latest beta release of their software allows you to actually completely integrate your home directory with your My Documents directory under Windows, and also gives you a facility to open up any particular document in either an OS X or a Windows application, even if the Windows session isn't running at that time. Now, to my mind, I'm not sure this is really such a great idea. I really want to be sure whether I'm using Windows or whether I'm using a Macintosh application, and I'm certainly very uncomfortable with too deep integration of the file systems, because after all, we know that Windows is very vulnerable to spyware and malware just from browsing the web or doing simple activities, and what I'd really hate to see happen is some malware get on your PC session, and because it's able to integrate with your home directory, then actually corrupt some of your Macintosh documents. Because in that case, you would actually be bringing down the Chinese walls between your Windows XP session and your Macintosh session and allowing the Macintosh side to be compromised by Windows. And in my mind, that's just really not a good idea and one of the reasons we're running Macs in the first place. These latest features have come from Parallels after the release of Fusion, and it could be surmised that perhaps Parallels are continuing to develop these features purely so they have a functional difference from the VMware Fusion product. Now, I don't know whether that's not the case or not, but I certainly hope it isn't, because I do believe that these functional developments are not actually to the benefit of Macintosh users. Now, during the VMware Fusion beta program, there was a flurry of excitement when it was announced that the betas were going to support limited DirectX 3D graphics within the Fusion product. And sure enough, Parallels followed suit and with one of their later versions brought that same feature into play. However, as I've said on a previous Fenestrations, I found that with both products, the 3D support is patchy and difficult to use, and certainly doesn't give you native performance. So I would take both of these products' claims of 3D support with a pinch of salt. It certainly is a case that your mileage may vary with each one. And if you're really interested in running intensive 3D applications under Windows and on Intel Mac, for instance, you're interested in running games, I would strongly advise you to use Bootcamp and boot natively into Windows to do that. On the subject of Bootcamp, both products will natively run a Bootcamp partition as a virtual machine straight out of the box without you having to do any sort of configuration. So all of this comes down to the real question of which one would I recommend? Well, that is an interesting question, and I'm not sure I can make a direct recommendation. I do own both products, I paid for them myself, and I've been very happy with each of them. All I could say is that for the moment I'm running VMware Fusion virtually exclusively, and I've left Parallels behind, principally because I am worried about those integration features. They can be turned off, but I really don't want to have to deal with that at this point. So I am running Fusion, and I'm very happy with it. It does everything that I need to do on my MacBook effectively. One final point to note about running either of these products is that RAM is king. Obviously, you're running two operating systems at the same time, so you want as much memory as possible available to each of them. So you really want to look to maximize the amount of RAM you've got available on your Mac. On my MacBook, I've got it fully populated up at 2GB, and I would advise anybody who wants to run either of these products in an effective manner to look to do 2GB as a minimum memory install on your machine. One final note is that I'm very conscious that listeners of Fenestration may find it quite tiresome the fact that I concentrate so much on Intel Macs. I do appreciate that people have older machines and might encounter Windows compatibility issues in those older environments, so I am going to spend the next few Fenestrations concentrating exclusively on PowerPC supported applications. As always, if you have strong views on that one way or the other, I do invite you to get in touch. That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.